You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
Better believe it, get on your knees and pray hard, then pray hard, and never look back. Once the world forgave you, then do right, then do good. And it's so hard to do right when you do wrong, when you turn right, but you turn all the way left.
Hensha, and welcome. We're glad you're here for a conversation with Dawn Karima. Energetic, exciting, entertaining, and informative. To our show. I'm so glad you're here, and I'm glad I'm here. My name is Dr. Dawn Karima, and we are delighted to have such a wonderful guest joining us today. Will you please introduce yourself to us?
Hi, this is Jennifer Anderson. I am the founder of Kids Eat in Color, and I'm delighted to be here.
I love that you're here. Thank you so much for joining us. I've been excited about this conversation for a while. What does it mean to eat in color?
Well, I think of eating in color as having a lot of different foods that a child will eat that they might have on their plate.
That sounds like a wonderful goal, but how do we get there?
Right. Well, I think, yeah, that's the tricky part. I think part of it is having a healthy mealtime structure in place where kids aren't being pressured to eat, but parents are providing different options and different exposures of foods for their kids.
Well, I love it, and it sounds like a beautiful idea. But what about those of us who have picky eaters? You know what I mean? Goldfish crackers, graham crackers, chicken nuggets, pizza, you know? How do we get from, to wow?
Sure. Well, I think part of it is we have expectations that maybe we could immediately get our picky eaters to, you know, turn around and eat everything. Mm-hmm. The thing is, a picky eater has a lot to overcome. Maybe they're afraid of new foods. Maybe there's something about them that feels weird when they eat certain foods. And so we may be trying to get them to eat by pushing them. Eat this. Eat your broccoli. Mm-hmm. Eat your broccoli. Eat your broccoli. And the more we do that, the more the picky eater is going to pull back and say, no way, no way, no way, I'm not going to do that. And so we get into this situation where it's power struggle after power struggle over eating broccoli or whatever it is, and then they just want to eat their goldfish. Instead, if we provide a snack where there is goldfish, but there is also broccoli on the table, there are also apples on the table, there's also you know, string cheese on the table, whatever your family eats, those things are available. Suddenly your child begins to have the idea, okay, there's goldfish here, but there's also all these other foods. And the more we show them those foods and the more we model eating those foods, the more they are more likely to eat those foods.
That is beyond beautiful. I appreciate that kind of practical help. For parents, what is the most important thing that you want us to know when we're trying to feed our toddlers, our children?
I think the most important thing is to understand that you're the captain of the ship when it comes to feeding kids. Toddlers think they're the captain of the ship. They're the captain of their bodies, but really, we're in charge of the ship, the house. So what we bring into the house, what we put on the table, what we give them, when we serve meals, we don't have to be a short order cook for our toddlers. Yeah, there's going to be some meals that they don't want to eat. Fine. They're going to have another snack or another meal right after that. We don't have to feed our kids all day. We don't have to chase them around trying to like put food in their mouth. We can just step back and say, look, I'm the captain of this ship. We're going to sit down to eat at these times or in this routine that our family does. I'm going to be in charge of what goes on the table. And I'm also going to make sure, you know, that it's calm, that I'm using screens the least amount possible, and I'm creating a balanced eating environment for my toddler.
Well, as a wonderful, wonderful goal, that's a great goal. How can we break that up perhaps into practical bite-sized pieces that we can handle every day?
Sure. I think that's really practical because as parents, we often hear advice that says, oh, you got to do everything perfectly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. As a person who lives in the real world, I know that's not really practical or even possible. Instead, if we kind of step back and we say, okay, what is the problem that I'm having mm-hmm. that is really bothering me? Maybe it's that my toddler like won't sit at the table. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's the fact that I'm only serving Goldfish crackers for snack. We think about that one thing that is bothering us and we say, okay, what is one thing that I can do to move toward my goal? You know, maybe I want to have kind of balanced snacks where there's maybe two or three things for every snack, but right now I'm only serving Goldfish. Okay, well, I'm going to make a goal to add a small piece of fruit 2 days this week. So we have begun to expand our toddler's options during snack time, but it was something that I felt I could do. Maybe it's every day that you add some apples, or maybe, you know, 2 days it's apples and 2 days it's banana. But whatever it is, we're saying, I'm going to work toward my goal, my biggest problem, but I'm going to do it in really tiny chunks. And as I go, I'm going to really pat myself on the back every time I do something to help my child, even if it feels very tiny.
Yes. I love that because so often it's very easy, especially with things as crucial as like eating or potty training or, you know, some of the really big milestones, it's really easy to feel like I'm failing. I'm never going to get this right. My children will exist on nothing but tacos or, you know, it will just be so daunting and overwhelming. And so I love that of, you know, making it into smaller steps and rewarding ourselves along the way. So when you think about family meal times or children eating, what do you want parents to learn from you?
I think on the one hand, I want parents to learn evidence-based practices. The Kids Eat and Color team, you know, we have a psychologist, we have occupational therapists, we have a pediatrician, dietitians, all this. And we all are bringing tons of expertise that go behind our recommendations, right? And so I do want to provide parents with those tools when they need them. At the same time, I think what parents often really need is someone to say, you're doing a great job, because you are doing a great job. We're inundated day in, day out with best practices. You know, it's coming to us through social media, the news, the newspaper, you name it. People are telling us what we should be doing to raise these perfect little kids. Well, they're humans. We're humans. They're going to grow up to be humans. And so this idea that we could somehow do everything perfectly and raise, I don't know, some sort of perfect human, that's not real. And when we step back from that and we say, you know what? I know my situation, which is probably complicated for different families at different times. I know my situation, and I'm going to do what's best for my family, and my best is good. It's not good enough. We hear over and over, oh, well, it's good enough. You did a good enough job. You tried really hard, but you did good enough. I don't think that's helpful for us. I think instead we need to step back and we need to say, I know my situation. I know what's best for my family in this moment, and my best is good. And when you have that perspective, it really gives you more space and energy to do the things that you want to do.
I wonder if also, I love what you're saying about it is good, it is all right. I wonder if sometimes as parents we suffer from the fear of permanence. Like, you know, if I just don't get them to eat a completely balanced diet, they'll grow up to exist on nothing but fast food and, you know, snacks or something. And we're afraid that maybe this stage or maybe this point where we are might become permanent. And so can you reassure us that maybe if we have a picky eater today, that's not necessarily the condition of the rest of their life?
Yeah, I think we often hear this, and I often hear this from parents. They say, you know, my picky eater is four. Is it too late? It's not too late. You know, we have parents who join our Better Bites picky eating course. We have parents who join because they have a picky eater, and the parents become less picky. They're adults. They're grown-up adults, and they've learned to eat more foods. I don't think it's ever too late for a child to learn to eat new foods. Is it helpful if you can kind of address this problem earlier? Sure, it is helpful. Does that mean you'll be able to do it earlier? Nope. I don't know what your situation is. You know, maybe you've recently lost your job. Well, now is not the time that you're going to be working on picky eating. And if you have to push that out a year, or if you decide, hey, I'm not going to work on picky eating at all, you're still a good parent. It just means you have different priorities, and that's fine. I think there's also this idea that if you don't care about what your child eats, you're somehow morally deficient. And I don't believe that. I think every family is going to have their own priorities, and those priorities are going to be competing. And sometimes you're going to say, you know what, this is just not my priority right now. And that's okay, too.
Thank you for that. That freedom in that helps us so much. I mean, that really sets us free, I think. And every day is a good day, but every day is a new day, too. So just because maybe your picky eater was picky when they went to bed last night, that doesn't mean that's going to be the rest of their life. You know, it's not going to be forever.
Absolutely. And it goes the other way, too, you know. Mm-hmm. You will, you know, your child will say, oh, I love turkey sandwiches.
Yes.
This is the best meal I've ever had in my life.
Yeah.
And so you serve them the next week, and then they look at you and they say,
what is this?
This is gross. I have never in my life liked a turkey sandwich.
Yeah.
And you're looking them in the eye, and you're thinking that you just told me this was your favorite food, and now you're telling me you've never even liked it, ever. So, you know, kids are kids. They're going to say all kinds of things. And I think that's why we have to kind of come back and say, look, I'm the captain of the ship. You don't have to eat it. But also, I'm not going to get up and, like, make you a box of macaroni and cheese. We're just going to call it a day, and I'm not going to kind of bend to the whims of kids and their taste. It doesn't mean we don't take them into consideration, but also kids are not reliable in terms of what they're going to do today and what they're going to do tomorrow.
And that's so interesting that you're saying that, because, again, I think that we grow and change. Right? I mean, the food I liked in college is not the food I like now, you know?
Like, right.
So
right.
We grow too, don't we?
Yeah. And, you know, I think we forget that kids get used to things. And I think the thing that always comes to mind is when I was in college, I did this internship in India, and I was in the northeast part of India, and there was this dish, this curry that they made. It was made out of fermented yam leaves. And the first time I had it, I remember thinking, oh my gosh, they made this out of dirt. And to me, who had never had anything like this, it literally tasted like dirt to me. I was like, how am I going to swallow what's in my mouth? I was there for 6 months. By the time I left, it was literally my favorite dish. It was my favorite dish. My taste buds actually adjusted. I came to appreciate the flavor. I came to appreciate the whole experience, and I loved it. So, you know, when we think about our kids, sometimes, you know, and this is really common, you know, a baby will say, you know, they'll throw something off of their high chair. And, you know, we've started it for the first time. And as parents, we think, oh my gosh, they don't like it. Well, yeah, they don't like it, but they've only seen it once. And, you know, I also often am kind of hesitant around things that I've never seen.
Sure.
I don't even know it's food, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But we have to keep serving it. We have to keep serving it. Doesn't mean we have to waste a lot of food. I recommend micro portions, which I consider to be very tiny, tiny amounts of food. You know, can just be one pea, one blueberry.
Oh, wow.
You know, a small piece of a strawberry. That is an exposure to a child. Mm-hmm. And it just gets them used to seeing it. Maybe they squish it. Maybe they smell it. Maybe they taste it. And eventually they eat it. But if we give up after one or two tries, then we really miss out and they miss out on those exposures over time.
Oh, I appreciate that insight so much, especially since you brought up a question, you know, that I think a lot of us wonder about, you know, how much should they be eating? I mean, really, is your child eating enough? How do we know?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm a Southerner. And so we have plates that have sideboards, right? People are like, oh, you'll need a big old helping of this and that. And so sometimes when, you know, I think when some of us see what our children are eating, we think, they'll starve to death. You know, so how much really should they be eating?
Yeah, this is so common. Especially, you know, babies often eat a lot. You know, people say, oh, my baby is eating so much food. Well, you think about it, the baby triples in size in 1 year.
Sure.
So they need to eat a lot of food to power that kind of growth. But if you step back and you say, do they triple in size as a toddler? No, not even close. No, they grow, you know, 4 or 5 inches, whatever. So suddenly they go from eating a ton to eating 2 bites one day.
Right.
And eating as much as you the next day. And then eating one bite, and then like seemingly to eat nothing for like a whole day. This is actually normal. It's normal. Parents don't have to be concerned about that.
That's amazing. I had no idea. Yeah, that's great. That's amazing.
And often what happens is parents then fall into a trap and say, oh my gosh, my child is going to starve, so now I need to make all macaroni and cheese. I need to make all kid food.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want them to starve to death.
Right.
The reality is they're not going to starve to death. In fact, they're learning to listen to their body. Am I hungry? Am I full?
Mm.
It's a skill that kids learn over time to listen to their body. And the more that we can kind of just give them space to say, okay, you can decide how much to eat. This is so important. You can decide how much to eat. I'm not going to push you to eat a lot or a little. Then they learn that over time, and then they can take that skill with them through their life, which is just a very helpful skill.
Absolutely.
For any of us who have walked away from a table going, oh my gosh, I like ate way too much because someone put a ton of food on my plate, and I was like, well, I got to finish it instead of putting it in a container or whatever. Now, sometimes, I want the whole plate of food, but for the times that I don't want the whole plate of food, I want another option. I don't want to feel like I have to eat it. You know what I mean?
I do, because so often I see families and caregivers push the clean plate option.
Mm-hmm.
Is that dangerous?
Yeah, you know, this is so hard because we know that this came from a good place. It came from a time where we did have to eat every single bit off the plate because, you know, food was scarce. It was the Depression era, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how our parents were raised. And then instinctually, we want to raise our kids in the same way. Also, no, it's not okay to waste food, right? So there's that reality, too. But when we push kids to clean their plate, what we're saying is, you don't know what your body needs. I know what your body needs.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to finish your plate, and I'm going to make that happen. And so that you do end up in the situation where you're a grown up saying, as an adult, I have containers in my house, and if I don't want to finish my plate, I can put the food in the container and I can eat it for lunch the next day.
Right.
But too often, if we don't really retrain ourselves, we're going to finish that plate of food even though we don't want it and even though we're going to feel uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a direct result of that kind of clean plate mentality of, if it's on your plate, you absolutely have to eat it. And our kids can really benefit if we can get away from that. And I know it's such a hard pill to swallow because so many parents, they just really think, oh my gosh, I really know how much my kids need.
Mm-hmm.
But as parents, we're on the outside, right? We actually don't know how they feel. on the inside, whether they're constipated or nauseous or they don't feel well when they eat a certain food or they're just not hungry. Really, they're the only ones who know that.
I feel like that's so important, too, in adjusting our perspectives, because when you look at what many restaurants or fast food places call a kid's meal, it's a lot of food. It's a lot of calories. And I think sometimes we become conditioned by what we see or what people tell us, and we think, oh, they should eat just about the same amount we do, you know? So could you help us with portions? I loved what you were saying about micro portions.
Yeah, so the micro portions is kind of a good way to kind of retrain parents and help them not waste food when they're exposing kids to food. We don't have to give kids like a whole cup of broccoli for them to be exposed to broccoli. We can just give them a tiny little sliver of a piece of broccoli. When we're thinking about how much our kids eat in terms of portions, we have to remember that they're the ones on the inside of their body. And eating different amounts on different days is normal. What we have been conditioned to think as a result of diet culture around us, as a result of this idea that calories is the biggest thing. We've been told by the packages and all sorts of things that we should eat the same number of calories. One serving is 200 calories, and we should have one of those, and we should have two of these. This is how we've been trained. And so we want to apply that to kids. But in reality, people, kids and adults, we have hungry days. We have days where we're not hungry at all. The more we can learn to listen to what our bodies are telling us, the more that we're able to eat what's right for our body. And so when we trust our kids to learn that, and we say, okay, you're telling me you're done. And I tell my child, okay, you're telling me you're done. This is going to be the last food until breakfast. So I want to make sure you're full. And then you serve breakfast the next day. Even if they come back 10 minutes later and they're like, oh, I'm so hungry. You're like, well, you know, that's the end. We're going to have this cute big breakfast first thing in the morning. Or, you know, this can go for absolutely any time of the day or night. When you're just helping your child learn, when am I hungry? When am I full? When do I feel stuffed? When do I feel like I didn't quite eat enough? The more we can give kids these opportunities, the more we are able to help them eat the right amount for the right portions for what their body needs on different days.
Wow, I really am grateful for that insight. I think it will help a lot of us. What if we do everything we can? We serve micro portions, or we introduce new foods in the proper way, and everybody sits down at the table, and our toddler or small child just still throws a fit or still doesn't want to do this. Do we make them continue to sit at the table until everyone else is done? Or do we just say you have to eat so many bites or stay here so long? Or do we let them go, set them free?
Yeah,
how do we?
Tricky.
I mean, we've done everything right. We've tried our best, and still, what do?
Oh, yeah. And I would just say you can try your best, but you will absolutely be in that situation unless you have some sort of, you know, miracle child. Which I know there's a couple of those out there. I have a friend who has one. But, you know, I think we have to step back and have our expectations in the right place, which is, yeah, things are going to go crazy. Should I have my kids sit at the table? I think yes, for an age-appropriate amount of time. The age-appropriate amount of time is going to be different for each kid because each kid has a different attention. But what I like to tell parents is start with 1 to 2 minutes per year of age. If you got a two-year-old or you got a one-year-old, they're going to sit for 1 or 2 minutes. You can help them learn to sit longer. You can use a sound timer and just say, okay, when the timer makes a noise, you can get down and you can slowly work that up until you find out how long they can sit. And, you know, for my kids who are super, super energetic boys, I got them up to 12 minutes, and 12 minutes was our time for several years. Like, that was how long they had to sit at the table. Then they could get down and go play. But even if they didn't want to eat at first, they knew they were going to have to sit there for 12 minutes, and we would talk together and maybe tell some jokes. that they had to sit there, and more often than not, they would choose then to take a few bites of the food that was there.
That's beautiful. When we maybe do come to the end of our rope or we're frustrated, you have such wonderful resources and you can help us. So what do you do to help parents with their picky eaters?
Sure. Well, we help, me and my team, we really help break down evidence-based information, which are, you know, recommendations created by professionals based on research, all this fancy stuff that you don't want to know anything about because it's way too time-consuming. We break that down into really small, actionable steps. Like, tell me what I need to know. Tell me what I need to know.
Sure.
Now, you have a extreme picky eater, and picky eating is over the top for your family. Then we have a picky eating course where we get way in the weeds and we help you solve that problem really practically with advanced techniques and all that. Or if you're like, you know what, I just want to know more about not pressuring my child. Mm-hmm. And I want to get my partner on the same page because mm-hmm. we're on different pages and that's creating stress. We just launched a new line of mini courses designed to help partners get on the same page with each other. And they're really fun. They're like 5-minute funny videos that you watch, you learn some things, you say, okay, how do I want to come to mealtime now? Do I want to pressure my kid? Do I not? I have some new things to think about. I have some new conversation pieces. And so these little mini courses are super fun. And then we have, you know, meal plans and we have articles for families. Basically, we try to be the information resource mm-hmm. for families, whether they just need meal ideas or whether they have a real problem and they need dietitian-backed help to get that done. So we think of ourselves as the leading nutrition resource for parents and families who need help with feeding their kids.
Wow. I hope somebody has said thank you to you for doing the work that you're doing. But just in case they haven't, I want to say thank you. And I want to make sure our friends that are listening know exactly how to follow you on social media and how to get your resources and connect with you. And maybe even if they need a little extra help, how would we do that?
You can find us on Instagram. We have a very large Instagram community. We're also on Pinterest, TikTok, Facebook, you know, all the places. But if you really want to kind of dive into the resource, kazikincolor.com is where you can find all the help you could need.
That's beautiful. Well, when we come back from commercial, we are going to actually talk some more about some of the questions our friends in the audience have had and some of the things that you would like to share with our listeners as well. So please don't go away. We'll be right back after these messages.
Lord, can you come and save her? Better believe they get on their knees and pray hard. They pray hard and never look back. Once the world forgave you.
The hardest thing to do at times is to make changes in your routine. Don't let that hold you back.
Wait a minute. They told us we had it all shorted. Well, yeah, I guess in a way we are running out of oil.
I'm Jeff.
I'm Tia.
And I'm Heather.
And we are Three Voices.
You want this drum over here? It's clear. You got Gilbert over here. You got LeBron over here. And guess what? We talking about it.
I'm trying to get over the dog whistle politics thing because I can't hear it and dogs supposed to hear it. So who hear the dog whistle?
Your opportunity is now to get up-to-the-minute information, great entertainment, and stimulating talk programs on your computer. Yes, I said your computer. Just log on to TalkTainmentRadio.com, click Listen Live to hear a program. The blogs and podcasts are up and running. TalkTainmentRadio.com can also be heard on your cell phone.
Yes, I said cell phone.
TalkTainment Radio, we go where you go.
Hi, everyone. Al Roker here. As a guy with his own catchphrase, I appreciate that after 75 years... Smokey's Only said,
only you can prevent wildfires.
But I'm filling in because there's a lot more to report. like when it's dry or windy. Be careful burning yard waste, because wildfires can even start in your neck of the woods. Go to SmokeyBear.com to learn more about wildfire prevention. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
When you take your car in for an oil change, a good mechanic will also take care of other routine maintenance to make sure your car runs safely and efficiently. Protecting your health isn't much different. When you get a COVID-19 vaccine, it's important to make sure you're also protected from other serious but preventable diseases. It's easy and convenient to get other routine vaccines at the same time as a COVID-19 vaccine. So make sure you ask a healthcare professional about other vaccines you may need to maintain your health.
Meet Norm. He lives with anxiety, but with the help of this latest innovation from Be Normal, he can be normal, just like everyone else. With the swipe of a finger, you can project happiness, confidence, machismo. Why settle for being real when you can be normal? The Normal Maker. New from Be Normal.
This item doesn't really work because there's no such thing as normal. We're all different. What we like, how our brains work. In fact, 1 in 5 of us live with mental illness. Don't filter who you are. Start by talking to someone you trust. And remember, there is no normal.
I can't believe he found them.
He seems sorry.
We very clearly told him not to look up there.
I'm honestly impressed that he was able to do it.
Right? What did he balance on that big chair?
Or? Yeah, I mean, I guess he'll just know what his gifts are this year.
I really thought we had hidden them well.
If they can find their presence, they can find a gun.
911, what is your emergency?
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns. Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Hey, I'm Haley Kiyoko, and I know what it's like to struggle with mental health issues. If you have a friend that's going through a tough time, now is the perfect moment to reach out. Learn how to start the conversation at seizetheawkward.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and the Jed Foundation.
Hey, it's me, your cell phone. We need to talk about something, serious. I know you love me, I know you like using me wherever you are, but I feel like this isn't working out when you're driving. I know you may think that it's possible to focus both on me and the road, but I just don't feel the same way. I think we should spend time away from each other when you're driving. It's for the best.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Extinction is forever. To save America's most iconic and imperiled species from extinction, we must fight for their future. Fight to save the natural lands that wildlife call home. Fight to limit pollution. Fight for smart development. Fight for their future. And fight for ours. For so goes nature. So goes us.
Unlike other health concerns, mental illness is not always easy to see.
D-E-P-R.
Mental illness doesn't show up on a scale.
Bipolar?
Sorting out a mental health concern takes professional diagnosis and treatment.
Anxiety. I thought so.
If you or a loved one has a mental health concern, don't go it alone. For 24-hour free and confidential information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP. Learn more at samhsa.gov/support.
What a wonderful conversation we're having, and it's all because of this dynamic guest. Would you please reintroduce yourself to our friends who are listening?
Sure. My name is Jennifer Anderson. I'm a registered dietitian and the founder of Cuisine Color.
How did you get this idea to actually found and create this beautiful resource and community?
Well, it really started with my own son, who kind of fell off the growth chart as a young child. And I had to specialize my knowledge as a dietitian into child feeding. And I was feeling kind of alone and stressed out. And I thought, you know what? I can't be the only person, can't be the only parent out there who's struggling feeding my child. And then I started an Instagram page And it turns out, no, I'm not the only parent struggling with feeding my child. Now our Instagram community is nearing 2 million followers, and we have a team, and we're, you know, creating more and more resources for families every day.
Wow, I love it. I love it. And I love your Instagram community. It's so caring and accepting. So often I think even when people have challenges with these things, they're faced with a society that considers neglect, right? If your child's not clean, if your child is hungry, if your child's diapers, something's wrong in that area, you know, people are very quick to pounce. And so mm-hmm. in your community, what I notice is people are supportive. And it's not like, oh, you're a terrible parent. Your child doesn't like blueberries. What's wrong with you? You know, and it's a lovely, lovely community, really, to see how everyone comes together and solution-focused community and ideas. So help me with this, please, because I think we throw the term picky eater around a lot. I hear a lot of people say that about their kids. And mm-hmm. some of them are on their second helping, you know, some of them don't right. just don't like caviar, you know, but, and then yeah. some of them are just like, no, I'm not eating anything except these goldfish crackers, go away. So what right. is the real definition of a picky eater?
Well, you're not going to like this answer, but there's actually no agreed upon definition of a picky eater.
Okay.
And that's exactly okay. why, that's exactly why you're hearing all these different stories. Is it means something different to every different research study. It means something different to different parents. So what I like to say is your child eating a problem for your family? And what we're doing there is we're kind of cutting through the fluff and saying, okay, if your child's eating is causing a lot of stress mm-hmm. for your family, then I don't care what you call it, but you absolutely do have a problem.
Okay.
You know, there are different levels of picky eating.
Sure.
And some of them are, you know, potentially dangerous for the child. And some of them are just stressful for the family. And we actually have a picky eating screener on our website that families can take for free that just kind of breaks it down and says, okay, is your child typically picky? Like, is this the sort of thing that we see a lot of families struggling through?
Mm-hmm.
Or
mm-hmm.
is this something much more serious and you need kind of advanced help in this area?
Oh, wow. That is so comforting right there. That helps so much. Thank you for that definition because it does help us. It's inclusive, not exclusive. So thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a few questions, if you don't mind. I mean, when I
yes.
had I said, oh, I'm going to have the pleasure of visiting with you, people were like, hey, you know, like it was amazing. You know, staff, friends, everyone had something they wanted me to ask. So the first question I'd like to ask is, what if you have a toddler, let's say, who just milk. They'd rather have milk than any food you could offer, maybe, or milk plus a few foods. Milk.
Yep. Yep. I have one of those children who could definitely go down that road. He calls
okay.
it my milk. You know, it's easier to, it's super easy to just drink milk. You don't even have to chew. It's great. It fills you up. It's nutrient dense. The problem is when a child drinks too much milk, they're really at risk for iron deficiency anemia.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, they're missing out on the exposures of a lot of other foods. They don't get different tastes and textures in their mouth. And so it really can contribute to picky eating in a big way. So while a toddler is going to have very, very strong opinions about
yeah.
what you're giving them to drink, you are the captain of the ship, and so you can say milk is available for breakfast. You drink as much as you want, but then it's not going to be available for lunch, or it's not going to be available for dinner. And really, you can decide, am I going to serve it once a day? Am I going to serve it twice a day? But I'm going to shoot for no more than 16 ounces in a day, because kids actually don't need to be overloaded with dairy. We need them to be exposed to a variety of foods as best as we can. And, you know, they don't need more than 2 to 3 servings of dairy a day max. And so if they're drinking 16 ounces of milk, that's 2 full servings of dairy, not including cheese and yogurt.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. All right. That helps so much. What about other people? One of our staff members says that her in-laws, her mother-in-laws and aunts-in-laws, and see, we're indigenous, so mothers and aunts and grandmothers, you know, we're matrilineal, so it's a big deal in our tribe.
Yeah.
But she said they have tremendous opinions, and they're always criticizing what she's feeding her child or how much her child is eating, and she doesn't have a good answer for them when they say, well, I've raised five kids, and all of them clean their plate, or something like that.
Yeah. Well, I think we have to kind of, on the one hand, fall back on our culture and say, okay, mom's in charge, and when we are at a mom's house, we're going to play by her rules. Sometimes mm-hmm. we have to say that.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you know, I take my kids over to my mother-in-law's, and she is definitely going to be saying things if they're leaving food on their plate, right? And
mm-hmm.
so I have to coach mm-hmm. them ahead of time and say, okay, we have to be really careful that we're only putting a very, very small amount of food on the plate
mm-hmm.
and kind of give the kids skills to exist in that setting. On the other hand, you know, sometimes some of the things that parents have done, and I know I'm thinking of one parent in particular, I know a grandparent actually, was like, I raised five kids and blah, 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 and none of them had eating problems. And I'm thinking,
yeah.
Well, I actually know that family, and actually three of them had pretty serious eating problems.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
But the person wasn't able to recognize that. And so sometimes we just have to say, you know what? I'm going to have to put up with the judgment. I'm going to do what I want at home, and I'm just going to kind of let it go. Or sometimes it may be appropriate, and it totally depends on the family, where you can kind of have a conversation and really honor what your grandmother, what your mother did, and say, wow, you did an amazing job. Also, the food environment has kind of changed,
mm-hmm.
and I'd like to try something new.
Mm-hmm.
And so I totally respect everything that you've done, and, you know, just because I'm doing something a little different doesn't mean that I don't honor and respect everything you've done. It just means that I want to try some of these new things and potentially asking for their support in that. And that's another reason why we kind of developed these mini courses. It's kind of that conversation starter for
yeah.
families
mm-hmm.
where you can say, okay, I'm going to sit down for half an hour together. We're going to, you know, zoom through these videos and then we can have a conversation. It doesn't necessarily mean that a family is going to choose to do everything, every strategy they saw in a video, but at least they'll be able to have a conversation and hopefully move forward on the same page, or at least at some sort of compromise that everybody can live with.
Oh, what a great idea. That is terrific. Our summer intern wants to know, should we feed our kids on a schedule and stick to that schedule, or should we have small meals and snacks scattered throughout the day?
So I'm a huge proponent of having times when the kitchen is closed.
Mm.
The kitchen does not have to be open all the time. The kitchen should close. Obviously, having, you know, in the United States, we often serve breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And for young children, we sometimes serve a morning snack, an afternoon snack. It all depends on the child, how much they sleep, you know, the family schedule, all that. But we don't want kids eating too much, because if they're eating every hour or two, they don't know if they're hungry or full. So
right.
they can very easily tend to eat too much or eat too little, and they're not really in touch with their body. But if the kitchen is closed for a certain amount of time and they have to get hungry before the next meal or snack, then they know, oh my gosh, I'm hungry. I know what that feels like. I sit down to a meal. I eat as much as I can. Then I feel full, right? And so they really understand that hungry, full feeling.
Excellent. That's really great. Well, then the next part of that question is, there's holidays coming up, picnics, cookouts, vacations, maybe different strange places, you know, other people's houses
mm-hmm.
or different schedules. Maybe the cookout doesn't start till, you know, 6 and we eat at 5.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, you know.
Right.
And so I think the other part of her question is, what do we do when we have something a little bit different?
Well, first of all, just brace yourself for chaos.
Yeah.
Young kids do not appreciate having their schedules messed with.
Yeah.
So, you know, on the one hand, you're going to go to the picnic and you're going to eat at 6 o'clock, but your toddler, they're going to be hungry at the normal dinner time. Mm-hmm. I just recommend bring a food that you know they like, feed them before. My kids have never, ever eaten well outside of our house. Yeah. Like, we go out to eat, they don't eat anything. We come home, they're like, I'm so hungry. I'm like, well, we were just at the restaurant. So I think we just have to work with our kids where they're at. Are they able to sit down and eat at a place? Are they not? Are there going to be familiar foods? Are there not? If a child is especially picky, it just makes sense to bring some food that you know that are safe for them, that they like, so that they can enjoy the evening. Now, sometimes this may require a phone call ahead of time where you call grandma and you say, look, he's not going to be able to eat this salad. You know, it doesn't mean we're not honoring your cooking. It just means we're really struggling with this. And so I'm going to bring this. And I just want you to know that ahead of time. Sometimes, because often we can get really upset and relatives can get offended or friends could get offended if all of a sudden on the spot someone is not eating something or they're eating a very little amount. And sometimes just a call ahead to give the person a heads up and just kind of explain it in a non-stressful time can really kind of smooth the way to a more peaceful experience.
Yes. Well said. Will you walk us through step by step from the moment we realize we have a picky eater? What should we do to introduce new food? Let's start with that. To introduce new food, and what should we do to get them to eat the food that we know and are familiar with?
Yeah. Well, I think the first step is make the meals that you want them to eat. Because if you never serve it, they're never going to eat it. Because it's literally not there. So they can't, it's not even possible for them to eat it.
Right.
So the more that you can continue to make the meals that are important to you and your family, the more they're going to say, see in their mind, oh, this is normal. These foods aren't going away. And every time you serve it, they see it, they smell it, they hear you eating it. The other thing is to really eat as much as you can with your child. Because your modeling, eating those foods, is one of the most powerful things you can do. It's so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it is those two things, if you do nothing else, those two things are going to just pave the way for your child eventually to learn to like more foods, unless they have really some extreme picky eating tendencies due to some other factors. And after that is really kind of stepping back and saying, okay, I'm not going to force my child to eat the food that I want them to eat. That usually doesn't work with picky eaters, especially over time.
Yeah.
And then really kind of also owning your role as the captain of that mealtime ship where you're saying, okay, I'm in charge here. I know you're picky, and I'm going to make sure that there is at least one food on the table that you feel comfortable with and you always eat, whatever that food is, or those foods. Doesn't have to be their favorite food, but just, you know, foods that are comfortable with. Something is always going to be on the table that you like, so you're welcome at the table. But also, I'm not going to get up and make another meal. I'm not going to ask you what you want and make you whatever you want for every meal. I'm not going to, severely cater to the situation. I'm going to continue to serve the meals that are important to my family.
That is so helpful. And I would love it. I would be honored, in fact, if you would just take the mic for a few minutes and speak directly to our friends who are listening, especially those who are struggling with mealtimes and picky eaters and feel like they're falling behind and failing. What do you want to share with them?
You are doing a great job. I know it doesn't feel like it, especially if it's so stressful and you're coming to the table and you feel your blood pressure increasing. You're not alone. There are millions and millions of families who are experiencing something similar.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can give yourself some grace and some understanding and just kind of say, wow, day in, day out, I am still feeding my child. And give yourself a pat on the back, regardless of what you're feeding them, regardless of how stressful it is. You could just step back and really say, look, I am winning the situation. I keep going. I keep doing things. That is what is going to give you the courage to keep going, the courage to maybe try some new things when you're ready. And it's also just going to remind you that, you know, you're part of the club mm-hmm. of parents who mm-hmm. are struggling. And that feeling of being a part of a community is so powerful for us.
So encouraging. That is just wonderful. I really appreciate it. What do you want us to know that we don't already know? Like, is there something that you want to make sure that we touch on and talk about that we might not have had a chance to discuss yet about this?
You know what? I think we've covered all the main points, and I actually don't have anything else to add.
Oh, wonderful. All right. Mission accomplished. Well, I do have a couple more questions. My aunt, bless her heart, she's literally having a old-fashioned standoff about candy and desserts and sweets.
Yeah.
Her daughter-in-law doesn't want the grandkids to eat sweets, and she believes that the main purpose of grandparents is to distribute sweets. So how do we handle candy? I mean, Halloween, right? We've got 4th of yeah. July parades where people will be throwing candy, and we've got all kinds of things that happen in summer, ice cream and, you know, get-togethers with dessert. How do we handle candy? How do we handle sweets without turning into Willy Wonka?
Sure. Oh, my gosh. It's the million-dollar question, right?
Yeah.
Especially for kids. It's like every time you turn around, they have a new bag full of candy from a birthday party or a school event or the parade or you name it, right? Or grandparents. I mean, grandparents seem to, like, go from parents who don't want their kids to eat candy to joining the grandparent club where, again, like you said, it's like the mission of grandparents just to, like, pass out candy. I think part of it when we're working with our families is to kind of give them options. If you don't want them to give as much candy, you have to say what they can do. So, for example, my mom is great at kind of asking permission for things, which I know many, many families don't have that, but she'll often say, can I give them candy? And honestly, like, she would feed them 75 times a day with candy for most of it. But I said, okay, Mom, can we do one dessert a day?
Mm-hmm.
And can you do all these other fun things? So when she sends packages, she often doesn't include candy. She'll include, like, a bag of chips, but then she'll include stickers and little toys from the dollar store and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. Okay. So that the kids are still getting special grandparent attention. They love her for it. But they're not getting as much candy, which I appreciate. And I'm also not totally shutting her down. I'm saying, look, go have ice cream. Like, ice cream with your grandma is the best thing in the world. Go do that. But, you know, when we're out there for 3 weeks, please don't do it 8 times a day because that is too much. Now, coming back to situations like, you know, Halloween and parties and that sort of thing, I think it's tricky. Because we have kind of interesting research around this. On the one hand, there's research that shows if you restrict it from your child, they eat less, which, you know, that's kind of cool. But the other side of that is they have obsessive thoughts about the candy, and they're more, you know, fascinated and want to get more of it, right? So long term, they may mm-hmm. eat more of it. So we have a situation where no, we don't want kids to get sick because they're eating so much candy, but also, no, we don't want them to be super, super obsessed with candy so that they're sneaking it and hiding it and going to their friends and binging on it when they go to a party. I don't have an answer for every family, and I know a lot of dietitians are like, do this. Just let them go with their Halloween candy. Well, we've had a Halloweens where my kids, yeah, they can eat as much as they want, and, you know, one of my kids tends to not overeat it. And the other one's like, I'm going to eat until I'm sick.
mm-hmm.
And we let them do that sometimes. And other times we've said, okay, we're going to sit down at the table. We're going to eat our candy. And then we say, okay, snack time is over. And we go to bed and we kind of cut it off. Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think every family has to navigate this. But one thing that all families can do, regardless of what situation they're in and what they choose to do, is how they talk about candy. Yes. If you're sitting there saying candy is poison, sugar is poison, candy is bad for you, candy's going to rot your teeth, candy this, candy that, right? That is sending really complicated signals to your child. And also, it's going to make them think, ooh, candy is the forbidden fruit. I want more of it. This is just something that happens when we say things are bad. A lot of people are like, okay, well, then I want more of it. Instead, we can call candy by its name. Hey, this is a gummy bear. These are sweet tarts. This is a chocolate bar. Whatever it is, we are just neutrally speaking about candy. Now, in our actions, we teach them we don't eat a lot of candy because we don't serve candy all day, every day, unless your family does, in which case that's your, you know, that's what your family does. But I want my kids to know, yeah, candy is a part of life. Also, it's just not around every day. And so in modeling, I teach my child moderation. In language, I teach my child neutrality. And this is something that we can do no matter what strategies we use.
I love it. I have one last question, and it is, can you recommend some foods that picky eaters just seem to like? Some food that might have some success with our picky eaters?
This is a great question, and it's so funny because on our health and development team, there's about nine of us, and you know, eight of us have kids. And I said, hey, what are all the foods that your kids consider kind of their safe food? What is the food that they'll eat as a picky eater? And I will tell you, all eight of us had a totally different list of foods, and it ranged from chicken to black beans and rice to plain rice to buttered noodles to plantains. It is so variable by child. And so I don't have like a magic thing, but I can say this. Picky eaters are really freaked out by mixed foods.
Oh, yeah.
When a child has a mixed food, they don't know what to expect in their mouth. It might be crunchy. It might be hard. It might be mushy. They just don't know what's going to come when they have a bite of mixed food. So when you can take your food, whatever you're going to serve, and you can separate the different components out, that is the way to help your picky eater feel less stressed and be more likely to try at least some component of the meal when it's not all mixed together.
You are such a treasure. Thank you so much for the patience and the wisdom that you've shared with us today. I think you've comforted a lot of folks and really uplifted us. And so I want to make sure that we can follow you on social media and get your resources and connect with you and get the help that all of our friends may need.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been absolutely delightful. And we love to welcome parents into our community, whether it is through the social media or the website. You know, if you need help, we are here for you at Kids Eat in Color. And we will always tell you that you're doing a good job no matter what you're feeding your child.
That's beautiful. Please give us your website again. Please give us your contacts on social media one more time, just so everyone can make sure to have them.
Sure. Our website is kidseatincolor.com, and our Instagram handle is kids.eat.in.color, although you can just type in Kids Eat in Color and it'll come up. And so Kids Eat in Color really on any social media channel, and you will find us.
I have loved everything that you've shared with us, and I know our friends have too. Thank you so much for joining us. We are so grateful for you, and we're grateful to you. And we're so thankful for all of you who listen to this show and all of you who make it possible by donating and sponsoring. And you were such a blessing to us, and this conversation has been wonderful. I'm Dr. Dawn Karima. I cannot wait until I'm with y'all next time. See you then.
Come and save her. Better believe they get on their knees and pray her. They pray her. And never look back once the world forgave you.
She is silent. You've got the power. The world's greatest radio. Talktainmentradio.com.